Welcome back to the Tomahawk Nation Hoops Dedicated podcast with yours truly, Matt Minnick, joined as always by Michael Rogner here on, it's August 30th, actually, August 30th, 2020, the fun year that it's been. And so we actually haven't come to you in probably about a month and a half, but, you know, the basketball world seems to pick back up again. And today's Dwayne's Bacon's birthday, 25th birthday. So we figured maybe that'd be a great time to get back on the mic here and celebrate Dwayne hitting that big 3-point shot at the end of the UVA game up in Charlottesville to silence that crowd. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, happy birthday, Dwayne. I think we actually just missed Patrick Williams' birthday and Devin Vassell's birthday.
Yeah.
Patrick Williams turned 19.
Yeah, he's only 6'8", 225, 19 years old. So.
Yeah, I think he's going to do all right in the upcoming NBA draft.
And I'm sure we'll talk about that, too. We'll get into – that's probably one of the factors that's leading him to rocket up some of the draft boards lately.
Yeah, for sure. And Vassell is not exactly an old man.
No, I believe he's a year older, right? He's 20, maybe. Yeah, uh-huh. So – A lot of Virgos, I guess, with the Florida State basketball program. What have you been? Have you been? Let me ask you this, Michael. I know previously from our conversations you've not been a huge NBA guy. I follow it pretty closely, to be honest. And some of that has to do with fantasy, and some of it has to do with just those guys are really, really damn good at basketball. But with the NBA being the only thing on lately for most days, the last month or so, have you caught any of the action?
Well, when players leave Florida State, that's typically about the last time I ever see them play. You know, because I don't watch the NBA. I don't have a team. It's not that interesting to me from an X's and O's perspective. But I have been so starved for sports that I started watching it. You know, once that started back up in the bubble, and now I'm all in. I was just watching the Celtics Raptors play. I've been watching a lot of the games. I've of course tuned into the Clippers to see if they're going to bring Man in off the bench. So yeah, I'm an NBA expert now. I think I've watched probably 25 games, so I'm there.
25 games. I feel like you could be. I mean, you might as well do an NBA podcast now, right?
yeah, that's actually why we're coming to you. You know, so sporadically, as I've been doing my NBA stuff on the side.
Yeah. Did you happen to catch? Speaking of T-Man, did you catch his? He was one. I want to say one assist shy of a triple double in their last game before the playoffs started. Did you catch that?
Yeah, and it was great to see because the bench knew it, you know, and they were all just. This standing and cheering the way that he does, you know, all the time, you know, trying to, you know, will him to that extra assist. And every time somebody missed a shot, they would groan. And unfortunately he came up one short.
I tell you what, he took over in that overtime. I mean, the game probably happened, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago now, but they went into overtime and it had kind of been a back and forth affair. And I think in overtime, he had maybe 9 points, a couple of rebounds, a steal, a block, and man, you know, no pun intended there, but watching Terrence Mann grab a rebound, you know, lead the break and step up into an in transition off the dribble three. This guy's putting in a lot of work to get better. I mean, that he has really he made a ton of progress between, you know, sophomore year to junior year and then junior year to senior year. And full credit goes to him. And then as well as, you know, Stan Jones, and Coach Hamilton, and at the time Coach Gates, but he's continued to accelerate that progress. He looks like a guy who could be a legitimate role player in the NBA for years to come.
Absolutely. And the way that they're using him is really interesting. You know, he was very rarely in a lead guard position at Florida State. And then he goes into the NBA and they immediately turn him into a lead guard. So that has been an interesting thing to watch. And it's going to, you know, I wouldn't say it's going to slow down his development at all, but it's going to slow down, you know, his ability to impact games. And I think that, you know, 2 or 3 years into his career, once he's really been working on that, you know, we'll see him, you know, playing a lot of minutes for somebody. I don't know if it'll be, you know, for a team like the Clippers, who has the best player in the world and, you know, at his position ahead of him, you know, or at least, you know, a couple of really good players. But he'll be playing a lot of minutes for somebody.
Yeah. I almost might have the opposite. I think he might do it for the Clippers. It's, to me, it feels like somebody who had did a great thesis in their undergraduate program, and now they're almost doing a postdoc, and he's studying underneath the greatest person in the world at his, you know, career field, in his position. And to be honest, you know, Kawhi's not a guy that I don't know that Kawhi is going to be in one city for 15, you know, 10 years. And I could see 3 years from now, after learning from Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and Terrence Mann, at that point would still only be maybe 20, 25, 26 years old. And I could really see him kind of taking the reign. Not that he's not Kawhi Leonard, but him kind of stepping into the starting lineup in LA and leading their kind of post Kawhi team, if you will, and bringing that same kind of mindset. Either way, it's got to be exciting for someone, for the whole Mann family, and for someone like that to be able to learn and develop under people like Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Along the NBA line, I think there's a lot of similarities, growing similarities with the NBA and college basketball in terms of the lead guard position. And we're going to talk about some lead guards that were recruited by Florida State later in this podcast. I think we're definitely going to get to the 2021 recruiting class. We're definitely going to get to next year's team that has a lead guard kind of like that with a Scotty Barnes. And we're just going to talk about the upcoming draft in general. But does there seem to be that, in your 25 games that you've watched, are you noticing any similarities with what Florida State has tried to do in the last couple of years on offense, or the way they've space and pace, that have you seen a team in the NBA that reminds you of?
Well, a lot of, you know, the NBA is kind of running on this very increased offensive complexity around the ball screen, and a decreased defensive complexity. And it's like they're simplifying the way you defend ball screens, and they're really amplifying the you know, so it's like this arms race that's going on around ball screens. And Florida State, you know, is a pretty heavy ball screen offense. They're not, you know, crazy, but I would guess that they're probably in like the, you know, the 70th percentile or 60th percentile, somewhere in there, in terms of how often they end plays with ball screens. So it's really been, you know, interesting to kind of watch how that is playing out in the NBA. You know, you've got these teams like the Rockets that just ISO everything sometimes, and, you know, and then other teams like the, you know, the Clippers are certainly fun to watch, Toronto, Boston, you know, they're running things that if you turn on a Florida State game and just watch, you know, one possession, you're going to see those exact same concepts being run at the NBA level. And, yeah, and that is very helpful for, you know, scouting guys like, you know, Devin Vassell and Patrick Williams, because they're already in a system that's kind of based on the NBA. You know, college is always going to be several steps behind, but you know, at least the rudimentary, you know, building blocks are all there.
Yeah. Yeah. The Spurs and Warriors are two other teams that I think and neither of them are in the playoffs, so you can't turn on a game and watch them right now, but when those teams are healthy, that, you know, you're going to see some similarities, both in terms of the switching. The Warriors love to switch on defense, and as well as some of the ball screen work. Obviously, the huge difference, anybody who just watches an NBA game, it is very apparent that these guys can shoot the lights out. And so the amount of space that you have to cover in the NBA is just a lot more. I mean, people like Dame Lillard and, you know, Steph, they're pulling up from 40 feet. You legit have to extend your defense out to 35 feet just to be able to cover the court. And which exactly, that's why when you hear people talk about Devin Vassell, they rave about his team defense and ability to be able to get into passing lanes and the length. And these are the types of players that Florida State's producing. John Isaac is already an elite defender in the NBA that are needed to be able to cover the geometric space that is required in today's NBA basketball. It's no longer like triangle offense or get down on the block and have a big man, you know, work the post. I mean, you have to be able to pretty much cover the entire half court of, you know, of the court. So it's interesting to see. The other thing, though, that could be a pretty big similarity here is the bubble. And so what has your been, you know, what have you think, you know, the bubble, what do you think of the bubble? Has it worked? Seems like it's worked.
Well, it's been brilliant. I mean, whoever came up with the concept of the bubble is, I hope they're doing well financially. That was just a brilliant decision. I think they went like 5 weeks without a positive test on the players. And you've got, if you're looking at it as a model for, you know, what could college basketball season do, you know, coming up, you know, a bunch of little bubbles, one big bubble, you know, it's opening up a lot of possibilities, and you're seeing, you know, all the sports outlets starting to pick up on that and discuss, you know, college basketball in the bubble era and see what happens. But I think that is definitely going to come into play, and it should come into play, you know, in terms of getting the season off to a timely start, and then, you know, keeping players and staff healthy during that start.
Yeah, it is, to your point, it has absolutely worked from the health perspective. I mean, there's almost no guys missing games because of COVID. I think from a mental perspective, and there are also a lot of other contextual realities to take into, you know, this conversation here that we're probably not going to have in this conversation, but at least acknowledging that there are a number of other non-basketball related issues, very worthy issues that are going on that are impacting the emotional aspect of these players. But I have heard players talk about, like, man, it's tough being away from your family or being away, like being in this bubble for weeks and weeks on end. And the NBA is a grind. You know, they're playing best of seven game series. It makes me wonder if in college basketball, if you could almost do it in waves. Leagues also don't have, you know, college conferences don't have the money to pay $1.5 million a day or whatever it is that the NBA is paying, you know, Disney World for all the hotels and stuff. But I do think you could do it in waves, where maybe you have, like, hey, maybe there's a holiday tournament type of thing where you take cities like Atlanta, Greensboro, Orlando, Charlotte, and that have multiple arenas, right? Like, if you think about Atlanta, you can play in Georgia State's arena, you can play in the actual NBA, the place where the Hawks play, you can play in Georgia Tech's arena. There's some other smaller colleges and universities in the area that you could play in, and you could probably have a small bubble type situation where people are tested coming into it, and if there's a positive, you know, that player sits out, or maybe a whole team does and they have replacement teams like we saw with the basketball tournament over the summer. And so you kind of do that maybe for 2 weeks, and then you can go back and get guys rested and, you know, practice a little bit and stuff. And then the ACC can come back, you know, maybe a few weeks later in January and have another bubble in maybe Charlotte or Raleigh or something. Maybe even bring a couple SoCon teams in to get some out-of-conference games. And again, you do that for 2 or 3 weeks. The beauty of it is that these guys can take school virtually, like they probably will be doing anyways, and then come back and rest a little. People go home and recuperate. And you could probably play a full, at least I would say, a round robin of 14 ACC games that way. But what do you think about that idea?
Yeah, the reason that the college tournaments are so much fun, you know, the holiday tournaments, is that, you know, you get 8 teams together, 16 teams together, and you come out with a winner, you know, on the weekend. So that's one style of bubble that you could do, is, you know, you bring together 8 or 16 teams. You know, you could do it in a place like Atlanta, maybe do I don't know the logistics, but 16 teams, maybe even 24 teams, something like that, you know, into a tournament style. So winners advance, that kind of thing. Losers have a loser's bracket, so everybody gets in, you know, say 5 games over the course of 10 to 12 days or whatever. And then you've got the conference type bubbles where you're just there to play everybody. So there's, you know, there's not going to be a winner at the end, but, you know, you might be able to get in 4 conference games, and you do that 3 or 4 times, and there's, you've got a conference schedule. So it's there. And I hope they're exploring it seriously, because the alternative of just everybody traveling all around the country on their own kind of just feels like a recipe for failure at this point.
The traveling around on their own does feel like it's just asking to be, it's not even even taking the health aside. It's just it reduces the margin for error, right? There's just so many more. Oh well, that person has to sit out now. The bubble works. We've seen it work in the NBA, and so I don't know why it wouldn't be replicated. And to your point, you know, if there's 15 ACC teams, look, you can have almost bubbles within a bubble, or like pods within a bubble. And there's some teams that are going to play Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, and some are going to play Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, which isn't all that different from the spacing of a normal college season anyways, where you'll have a game on Wednesday, Saturday, and then sometimes the following Monday. So it's not all that different. And you can get chunks of six or seven games in at a time and then rinse and repeat. It would seem like the NCAA tournament would have to follow some type of bubble, even if they did the regions, if they took the four regional brackets and did it in kind of their own bubbles and then came together. I don't see a way that the NCAA can function for another year if they miss out, if they have two consecutive years of not having the thing that makes them 95% of their money. You remember, they already canceled the NCAA tournament last year, and a two in a row would just seem to be a death knell.
Yeah, there absolutely has to be an NCAA tournament this year. I mean, there's no doubt that there has to be one. And having, you know, setting up the season with a series of bubbles kind of gives the NCAA a chance to work out all those kinks and figure out how it is that they're going to put together a 64-team or 68-team tournament at the end of the year, you know, using the bubble format. So you kind of work out all the problems, figure out what works, what doesn't, and then you put together a really solid tournament at the end of the year, which is going to remind people of the current NBA playoffs, which are working great. You know, you mentioned the social problems. You know, of course, you know, that has crept in to every aspect of society. So of course it's going to creep into the NBA, you know, bubble. But, you know, 3 or 4 months from now, who knows what's going to be happening in the world. And the regardless of you know, whether games are getting canceled now or boycotted or whatever, you know, it's still providing the model for how you run a successful, you know, tournament with a bunch of teams.
Yeah. So now all we have to do is hope that the NCAA has just proven itself over time to be just a really efficient and really, you know, kind of model organization for being able to run logical and thoughtful processes. So I guess, you know, we'll just leave it up to them to get it done, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to describe the NCAA. Yeah, luckily, though, the greed is going to win, you know, and the NCAA has had no problem, you know, kind of showing their colors there. So they'll figure out a way.
Well, and here's the thing, too. So last night, I actually did not watch it, but Austin Peay, I think, and some other crappy football team played. And apparently, so this was a real live college football game. If two shitty college football teams are managing to play in August, I cannot imagine that next March the NCAA is going to say no to, you know, $1 billion or whatever it is they make. So,
I tuned into our Slack channel on Tomahawk Nation last night, and they were talking football, and I didn't realize that there was an actual game going on. And then I started panic thinking, have I missed like a Florida State game? Like, you know, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. But
apparently Florida State is not playing last night.
No, it's another couple of weeks. I got my tickets. They asked us to season ticket holders were given the opportunity to choose essentially from one 3-game pack or the other 3-game pack so that we can social distance in the stadium. And I went with the one that had the first game, the Georgia Tech game, thinking that, well, at least I'll get the first game in maybe. So
you're guaranteed a game.
That was the logic behind my decision there. You know what also though, so going back to some basketball stuff and kind of maybe closing the loop on some of the NBA, that is so wonderful to provide this great bubble model for us. But what's also taken place within the last 10 days or so, I think it was 10 days ago exactly, is the NBA draft lotto happened. And, you know, so if you're not familiar, the lotto is where the 14 teams that don't the NBA has 30 teams, 16 make the playoffs. So 14 that don't make the playoffs, they are then put into a lottery situation to decide the top 14 picks in the league, notwithstanding any trades that have been made for picks in previous years. And the teams with the worst records are given the best odds of finishing at the top, but they are not guaranteed the way it is in football. And that's to prevent, so the teams aren't incentivized to tank. So there's really not a difference between having the worst record versus like the fourth worst record. And anyways, the lotto happened. And at the top were some of the teams you might expect that were horrible. The T-Wolves, the Warriors, I think Charlotte and the Bulls are up there. Both made a bit of a jump. And looking forward, in October will be the NBA draft, and FSU is going to feature quite, I mean, we've had draft picks recently, right? Dwayne Bacon, we just mentioned, his birthday, he was a second round draft pick. Fiondu was drafted in the first round a couple of years ago. Terrence Mann, as we talked about, was a second round, one of those second rounders who's really looks like it's going to pay off for him. John Isaac was a lotto pick a few years back. And he's, when healthy, been good. But this year feels a little different, because this year it seems like Florida State could be the school talked about during the first round of the NBA draft. I mean, of all the universities, the one with the best chance of having two lotto picks, two top 14 picks, is Florida State. That seems like a sentence that would have been weird to say a few years ago.
Would have been weird to say a few months ago. I mean, I don't think that we really saw Patrick Williams as a one and done lottery pick. Maybe you did, because I know you were really high on him. But it just in general, and then Vassell also developing into a lottery pick in his second season. Both of those things were certainly possibilities, but to have them happen is remarkable. But yeah, I've kind of gone through other teams, and I don't really see anybody who's threatening to have two lottery picks. About the closest I can come up with is France. You know, so the country, yeah, of France has
the country of France,
right? Maybe, but yeah, I don't see. And for Florida State, the last time we had two first round picks of any kind, I think, was '93 with Doug Edwards and Sam Cassell. Neither of them were lottery picks. So Florida State has obviously never had two lottery picks in the same year. It's really remarkable. It's going to be Dave Cowens was the fourth pick overall in the draft. I think George McLeod was another guy. So, you know, John Isaac. So Vassell and Patrick Williams are both popping up in the fake drafts. Is kind of in that range potentially. You know, the high end of their picks are kind of in that John Isaac, George McLeod range. It's remarkable, and for a fan who's just getting into the NBA, it's super fun to see, you know, how successful of Florida State is going to be in this draft. And yeah, they better be talking about it. If they're talking about one school, they better not be focusing on Kentucky and Duke like always. You know, they better be talking about Florida State.
Yeah, no, it will be impossible not to talk about Florida. I mean, it's honestly possible that Vassell and Williams could go back to back, something like pick 7 and 8 or something like that. But I wish that this was a year that they could have, of all the years, not to have an in-person draft. It would be so great to see Ham sitting down there, you know, in the green room or whatever they got, Madison Square Garden or something, and sitting there with Pat and Devin, who, if you follow them on Instagram, both have pretty good style, and they'd be, you know, dressed to the nines with their suits and stuff. And that would be just a cool moment. But hopefully they can still get some Zoom footage or virtual coverage or something. I, at this point, and I should note that we should have some draft we will have some draft preview stuff coming up on Tomahawk Nation. Kevin Little's gonna have some breakdown articles coming up of both Devin and Pat, and of course, as the draft, you know, as it gets closer to October, I'm sure we'll have some, maybe even do a mock draft. But it's interesting because Devin Vassell probably has the highest floor, maybe in the entire draft. By that, I'm like, he just seems like a surefire. He will be able to contribute to an NBA team, either with his 3-point shooting or his defense or both. That he just has such translatable skills to what the NBA is trying to do. We talked maybe 10 minutes ago about you know, you see some of these things in Florida State system that you see in the NBA, and Devin Vassell embodies that. So he's got a really high floor. I probably, if I were an NBA GM, would start to consider him around pick four, and really would like him in that 6, 7, 8, 9 range, because it's a guy that you know you're getting a contributor. Frankly, if Luke Laux has any control of what Golden State's doing, they need to trade. They're at pick two. Trade pick two down to about pick six, and draft Devin and plug him in immediately as a 3-and-D wing that could help them, you know, in next year's playoff run when they need some depth. Patrick, he just turned 19, I think, 4 days ago, youngest U.S. player in the draft. His floor is much lower. He doesn't have a ready-made shot from three like Devin does. He is still thinking his way through defense, although clearly, you know, the physical attributes are there. I mean, a chiseled body, a little bit maybe slow sometimes on the lateral quickness, but really length, strength, physicality, can get to the rim. It's all there. His ceiling, in my opinion, is one of the top five in the draft. His floor is also, you know, not near as high as Devin's. His floor, he could have if he doesn't reach his potential, I don't know, maybe not quite the career that one would want, but his ceiling is really, really high. If he puts it together, you're talking about a Paul George type of player. And so if you're Michael, just, you know, this budding NBA expert that you are, do you want the guy that's got the high floor or the sky high potential?
I guess it depends on where I'm picking. You know, this year's draft, you've got, what is it, Anthony Edwards, LaMelo Ball, and James Wiseman are talked about as the top three picks. I don't know.
Yeah, and there's Killian Hayes up there too. Could be in that top range in the USC center. But yeah, those first three you mentioned.
Yeah, I just don't know that I want any of those guys. You know, if you win the lottery this year, I don't know that you're getting that much more value than, you know, somebody who's picking third or fourth. So if I am picking kind of higher in the draft, I would take Pat Williams first. And if I'm picking probably in the 9-10 range, I would take Devin Vassell first. And the reason is that, you know, you want someone just a solid who can contribute in that space around 9 or 10 or 8 or 12 or, you know, whatever the pick is. And if you draft Devin Vassell, you're gonna get a player who's gonna contribute right away. You're gonna get a player who shows flashes of being able to do some really special stuff. But if you're a GM that's picking a little higher, you know, I think that you're more willing to take a risk. You're likely the GM of a team that stinks. You know, you're really stretching for someone who's gonna be a star. And of those two players, I would agree with you that Patrick Williams has a higher ceiling. And I would probably take him just because he has a better chance of being a star. And at some point, if you're a GM picking in the high spots, you've got to grab Jason Tatum. You know, you've got to grab somebody who becomes a stud. Otherwise, you're not going to be a GM anymore. And Patrick Williams probably is that guy more than Vassell.
Yeah, and I do want to note I do not want – being a role player in the NBA is a good thing. Let's take a step back and realize how many really, really good college basketball players are not even in the NBA. If you go look at European rosters, you see guys who were All-Americans in college. And so being – if Devin Vassell – I think his ceiling and look, Devin, if you're listening, I hope you go prove me wrong. You were a guy that was a three-star recruit. I happen to be someone that thought NBA was in your future already, even then. But I hope you prove everybody wrong and go win a league MVP. But if I'm being realistic, I think that Vassell's ceiling is kind of like that maybe third best player on an NBA, like a title contending team. So not the guy that you build a title contending team around, right? That's LeBron, Kawhi Leonard, whatever. And maybe not even the Dwayne Wade sidekick of the title team, but like that third guy who is going to make shots for you when it matters. He's going to get, you know, be part of defensive stops. He is just in high IQ and able to contribute in several ways. So that's kind of the ceiling for Devin Vassell. But his floor is so high that, to your point, if you're already a contending team, if you're a Golden State, if you're the Bulls that are maybe one player away from contending, if you are the Spurs that are picking there at like 11 or something, why not grab someone that can help you right away? If you are the T-Wolves, or maybe, you know, the Hornets or something, that just they're not one piece away, they're a lot of pieces away, maybe swing for the fences and see if, you know, if Patrick Williams reaches the kind of ceiling that is like, this dude is 6'8", physical, and can take over basketball games. So I think we might be saying the same thing. It all comes down to team fit, to be honest. I hope neither one of them goes to the Knicks. That would just be – I would feel bad for both of them. I don't know. Hope the Knicks pick Edwards. I don't want Anthony Edwards on my team. That's inefficiency in a basketball player, just personified. But do you have a team that's in your 25 games that you've watched that you would say, ooh, I could like it if Devin goes there. That'd be fun.
He's not going to go to Milwaukee. He's not going to go to the Lakers. But I think if he ends up on a team like that, where you've got someone who is, you know, like Giannis or LeBron, that's just really big physically, that constantly demands double teams, that always has the ball, you know, so that he is the guy out on the perimeter, so the guy sitting in the corner, he's got to have a long career. So I think that style of team would really fit him well. And you mentioned earlier role players, and so I just happened to click on I'm looking at the Clippers roster here. So I pulled up Joaquin Noah, the Gator, and I know that he had times probably in his career where he was more than a role player. He's made the All-Star team a couple times, but he's made $125 million. You know, so
yeah,
you know,
he was never the star player on a team. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and he has done just fine for himself.
Yeah.
So Devin could, you know, when we're saying he's not going to be the best player on a great team, he could also, you know, wrap up his career with a couple $100 million made, you know, over that time, and good for him.
Yeah. If Devin went to the Hawks, the Atlanta Hawks, you know, Trae Young is very ball dominant, and it could needs they need defense, and they could use someone to stand in the corner when Trae Young starts to draw double teams. That would be really interesting. I also think the Spurs would be a pretty unique fit. Those are, and I already mentioned Golden State. Pat could fit in with a lot of teams, but honestly, he'd be interesting with the Hornets. Giving them some more defense, and they've got a nice young point guard there, and maybe let Pat kind of team up there with some of the existing young pieces and build for the future. But or the Pelicans could be interesting too. What do you think about a Zion and Pat Williams team?
I would watch that team.
I would watch that team too.
Tell you that. I don't know how I'm still. I wouldn't say I'm on the fence about Zion. I mean, he's obviously a massively stud player. He's been a little injury prone, and you know, who knows. But yeah, that team put another guy who can just jump through the gym, and that would be an awful fun team to watch.
It would have been. I think Memphis with a previous trade had to give their pickup to the Celtics or something. But man, if you'd have added either Devin or Pat to Ja Morant and Brandon Clark, then the stuff they got going in Memphis, that would have been. I mean, you talk about a big guard and, you know, an athletic guard. That would have been something else. But I don't know. I would have to check the order again. But I don't know that Memphis is going to be in a position to get. If you're not picking the top 15, I don't think you're getting either Devin Vassell or Pat Williams. We're going to go to break, go back and see if it's still raining, because that's all it does in Tallahassee these days. And when we come back, we'll shift gears from talking about some players that were on last year's team to maybe looking towards this year's team and the future as well. All right. We just had that nice discussion about Pat Williams and Devin Vassell, both guys with legitimate lottery aspirations. who on, let's look at this year's team, the 2020/21 team that, as long as the NCAA can figure out a way to do some sort of bubble, I think I feel good about seeing them on the court in some form or fashion. Is there anyone from this year's team that next year we're going to be having another conversation about the lottery?
Yeah, it'll be the new guy. You know, Scotty Barnes is, I don't know, he's certainly not a lock to be a lottery pick, but he's going to be talked about all year, you know, in that group. You know, Kate Cunningham, there's a couple guys that took the G League route, that are taking the G League route, that'll, you know, be in that discussion. But Scotty Barnes is, you know, this, you know, freshman stat stuffer, and even on a team like Florida State where he's not going to be playing a gazillion minutes, he's still probably going to put up, you know, like say 15 points, 7 boards or you know, something like that, you know, plus some assists and so he'll be discussed there, and honestly I don't know that anybody else on the team is going to get drafted. You know, maybe Calhoun might have a chance, but it's hard to evaluate JUCO guys before they get here. Maybe Balsa has a shot at it. But I think looking at next year's team through the NBA draft filter, we're talking about Scotty Barnes.
Yeah. Yes. Scotty Barnes is – I tell you, if he had any semblance of a perimeter shot – and, hey, Scotty, I hope that's developed. If you're following FSU hoops and stuff on social media and going, I mean, these guys are working. They're not sitting around playing video games right now. They are working. And Scotty Barnes, the latest I've seen of him, he is a chiseled, muscular, physical individual. Dude doesn't look 18 or 19 years old. But if he had a consistent 3-point shot, you'd be talking about a top 3 pick in the draft. As it is, you know, he still fits what the NBA is trying to do. He does that kind of Draymond Green type of forward who can push the ball up the court, pass, shoot, kind of. Draymond has had games where he can shoot. I wouldn't call him a shooter. But really, really strong defensively, guard multiple positions, can play make for others, can draw fouls and get to the line. Can rebound, can block shots. I mean, that's what Scotty Barnes has. He's just more athletic than Draymond. I mean, he can also finish above the rim, which is not something you see Draymond do a lot of. So he is what the NBA sort of is looking for. I don't know that I feel confident in saying that unless he wows us with a shot, he won't be a top 5 pick because Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga, Greg Brown. I mean, the 2021 draft is loaded. But I do think that Scotty Barnes, it would be, a bit of a surprise if he's not a top 15 or 18 pick and could easily get into that top 10 with a good showing. Sadar Calhoun is someone that you cannot take anything from the JUCO film, just like you probably can't take a lot of stuff from high school film or AAU film, to be honest. But like Devin Vassell, this is all I'll say. Similar to Devin Vassell, he has very good positional size, and he also comes ready-made with a 3-point shot. And if you're giving me a 6'5 or 6'6 athletic guy who proves at the college level he can make 41, 42, 44%, that individual will be drafted. I don't know how high, but that individual will be drafted. So I will say that I think that at some point in time, there is a good possibility Calhoun is drafted. Maybe even as soon as next year, if he flashes the shot strong enough. What are your thoughts on MJ? Is that kind of a Trent Forrest feel to you? Like, you know, fringe NBA prospect, needs to show a few things?
Yeah, he's got a lot of the intangibles. You know, he's got good size. He's strong. He's you know, I don't believe in clutch, but he's been pretty clutch, you know, in games. He, you know, he can shoot, but nothing really pops like you need to pop at the NBA level. There's an awful lot of guys out there that are 6'5" that can knock down threes.
Well, and I don't think he's a real 6'5" either. I'll be honest. Yeah. I think having stood next to him, I think he's more like a 6'3" and a half, 6'4".
Yeah, and so to be able to get into the NBA at that height, there's just so many guys. You know, if you're 6'10 or 6'11, there's not that much competition at your position. But if you're, you know, 6'5 or 3.5 or whatever, there's a gazillion guys out there that can fill it up. And so I think he's going to have to show the ability to really fill it up. And I'm talking 43-44% this year.
Yeah, he's got to get that 42-43.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then he'll get a look. But but at his age, that look that he's going to get would probably be a second round pick.
Right. I mean, Draymond Green, we talked, he was an All-American in college. I mean, was he one of the best? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, he was one of the best players in college basketball his senior year?
His senior year, yeah, he was the best player in college basketball per the Pomeroy rankings, which are pretty good.
So he was the best player in college, and he was a second round draft pick.
And he was a stud all 4 years that he was at Michigan State. Yeah. He was a stud. It's not like he developed late. You know, he was on everybody's radar and was the best player in the country and then was a second round draft.
Yeah. So I think that if you see Trent Forrest's name go undrafted or MJ Walker, that does not mean they don't get a shot. And look, Draymond Green, you talk about someone making hundreds of millions of dollars in his career. Dude's got three titles or whatever, you know, like, I think his contract right now is $130 million or something like that. So, listen, you can go and prove yourself. That's just not what the NBA drafts for when they're drafting the top 20 players. That's just not the type of person who is getting drafted. It isn't the 24 or 23-year-old senior that checks a lot of boxes but doesn't have any one elite skill. So I don't know. Yeah, MJ would have to really tighten up that handle and, like you said, get it up into that 43-ish percent range. What about Raekwon? Same thing, right? Like, you got to be elite at something in order to get drafted.
Yeah, everybody compares him to Draymond and
Raekwon Gray, I should say, not Evans.
Yeah, yeah. The people compare him to Draymond Green because he looks like him. You know, size, body type. But if you look at Draymond Green at the same age, he was already a really, really good Big Ten player. And Raekwon Gray has shown flashes of being a good player. He's, you know, he was driving last year. He was occasionally making shots. But again, you know, another guy who just hasn't put it together, you know, to the point where the NBA is gonna take it seriously. So luckily he's only a junior, so he still has time, but he is getting up there with age. So it's going to have to happen quick if he wants to play in the NBA. And I mean, there's no knock against him for, you know, being a three-star recruit and not making it to the NBA. But my hunch for him is that he's going to be a pro, you know, somewhere other than the NBA.
Yeah. Well, every single guy I think that has had their name mentioned on this podcast in the last 20 minutes will be a professional basketball player.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and eliminate that. We are talking again, all Americans go play overseas. So, every single one of these guys will be paid lots of money to play basketball. Raekwon, he needs to make that jump, a significant jump this year, not his senior. He needs to make a significant jump this year, to get, I think, in some serious NBA conversations. I honestly think he could be an NFL draft pick at tight end, to be quite honest. I think he'd be given a flyer in the sixth or seventh round as a tight end. There's probably people out there thinking, I thought I tuned into the FSU basketball podcast, not the NBA podcast. So let's think about, forget the NBA draft aspect. These MJ Walker, Scotty Barnes, Calhoun, Gray, Bolsa, even Polite is, I guess, a guy who, in theory, if he had a strong enough single skill set, could you know, get a little NBA potential. But what about in college basketball? What are your – it's August. We still have a couple months away, but what are you starting to marinate around in your brain for some college basketball success by this year's Florida State team? I mean, can they be a two seed again? Can they repeat as ACC champs? Regular season champs?
Well, last year's team, one last NBA thing is last year's team was probably the team to win the national title. Looking back over the past 25 years, you've got the average team that won the title has 5 draft picks on the roster, and 1.7 of those happen in the lottery. Over three of the first round draft picks on average per team. So last year's team, you know, with those two lottery picks, is probably the team to get it done. And this year's team, I think, is going to take a step back, which is, you know, it's hard not to when you're
a two-seed. Take a step back from a potential title team.
Right. So Florida State is not going to finish the season ranked fourth in the country or third or whatever, you know, we finished at this year. But that being said, a lot of national college basketball writers are setting themselves up once again to look like idiots. Every year come March, or at least the past few years, all these college basketballs are like, well, wow, how did we possibly underestimate Florida State again?
Yeah.
And you know, that's March. And then you fast forward to November in the beginning of the season and people don't have them in their top 25. And so I've seen a lot of, early top 25s without Florida State in it. And I just think it's silly. I think Florida State is probably belongs somewhere, you know, in the high teens, you know, like 18, 19, so it's, you know, somewhere around there. You've got this core of players that is coming back from a great team, you know, Osborne, Walker, Polite, Gray, Balsa, you know, even Raekwon Evans committed some pretty significant minutes last year. And then you're adding the highest ranked recruit in the ACC, you know, to the team, as well as arguably, you know, the top, two, you know, the second best JUCO player in the country. So you've got this core of really good role players. We talked about role players in the NBA. We've got a lot of great, or, you know, really solid role players on Florida State's team. And then you're adding two guys that are, you know, have the ability to put up, you know, loads of points in very different ways. And so not having Florida State in your top 25, I think those writers are making a pretty big mistake at this point.
Yeah, it's at this point. What was the podcast a few months ago now, but we talked about how FSU hasn't had a first team all ACC player since like Thornton or something, Douglas, yeah. Maybe. I guess it was Tony Douglas. Yeah. That's just horseshit, right? Like, you think about a team that just finished fourth in the country is going to have two lotto picks. And the guy wasn't a first team all ACC player. Like, okay, whatever. I kind of feel the same way about the preseason basketball rankings. It's just like you said, every Leonard Hamilton constantly overachieving. Maybe we flip it around and say college basketball journalists constantly underachieving at their job. Exactly. 'Cause it doesn't seem to me that it would take a whole lot of critical thinking to say, like, all right, well, yeah, they lost two or three players, but still returned six contributors, not just six randos. It would be a unique set of circumstances with injuries or whatnot for us to not be a top 30 team, you know? But I think we will probably we'll get into this more deeply as gets closer to the season, hopefully, but I would agree. I think Virginia is probably the best team in the ACC coming into this season. They were really playing well towards the end. And Duke, as is always, Duke will have loads of talent. Coach K will still find a way to have only a 7 or 8 man rotation, despite having 9 or 10 top 50 players. But they will roll out with their eight. But I think Florida State has a lot of interchangeable parts that Leonard and Stan must be really excited about. And you know, we didn't even mention Ngom, who's coming in from Canada, that can kind of serve as a rim protector. The big guy can serve as a rim protector that maybe was missing a little bit last year, even if he only plays 10 or 12 minutes a game. So that'll be a nice benefit to have. And you know, the thing about how COVID has changed some of the workouts and practice schedules and whatnot, you know, hey, I want, give me the team then that has a guy like MJ Walker coming back. Give me the team that has a guy like Malik Osborne or Anthony Polite that are 3 or 4 years in the system, that if we've had disrupted practice schedules, if coaches haven't been able to be around guys as much, if it's more on, you know, individual motivation to go and learn the system, well, I think it's kind of nice. Maybe we should be talking about the teams that are, you know, like the Iowas of the world, but the teams that are bringing back players who have 3 or 4 years in their team system.
Yeah, you mentioned Duke, and they're going to have a lot of young guys again. And North Carolina is the same way. They're totally stacked from a talent perspective, but a lot of it is really young. And so I would agree that Virginia is probably the best team in the ACC. And you know, their model is kind of like Florida State's. You know, you get guys in, you get them old, and you know, and that's the way that you win. You know, from a talent perspective, Florida State's roster does not jump out in any way, you know, from other ACC teams. Duke has 9 top 50 guys. Florida State has 7 guys that were even evaluated by the services.
Yeah.
Florida State's 9th guy is not a top 50 recruit. He's a never was analyzed recruit. You know, Florida State has 3 blue chips on the roster. The only teams that have fewer are Georgia Tech, Boston College, and Wake Forest. You know, everybody else has more. So it's tied with Syracuse, but everybody else in the ACC has more. And so it's really reliant on that age that you're talking about. You know, these Coach Ham's bringing back a team that's got some experience. You know, they've got, even though they weren't stars, it's very valuable experience, and that's what's going to see Florida State through this year. And if you're a writer out there that's just looking through the recruiting rankings, then yeah, Florida State's not going to pop in anyway, except for Scotty Barnes.
I mean, Sadar Calhoun, he posted this on Instagram, but he showed handwritten letters that he wrote when he was in high school, begging NC State, I think, to give him. He was from the either lower Virginia, like kind of Southern Virginia, you know, near Raleigh area, and begging NC State to allow him to walk on or give him a look, right, in high school. And they didn't, and he went JUCO, and I think he will probably have a big game against NC State if we play them in this. I don't know what the schedule is going to look like, but I wouldn't be surprised if he made 7 or 8 threes. So yeah, from a talent standpoint, because Devin Vassell had a lot of talent, but from a recruit ranking standpoint, Florida State is not a top 10 team. However, maybe that's a good segue. Thank you very much, Mr. Rogner. There is a top 10 ranking. In fact, there's a top 1 ranking that is associated with Florida State recruiting, and that is with the 2021 class. That you want to talk about lead guards and, you know, big guards who can shoot and pass and dribble and, you know, play multi-position defense. This 2021 class seems like it will be a monster.
Yeah, I actually click on those rankings pretty much every day just to see, hey, Florida State's number one class in the country. I don't know that it's going to stay that way unless we land another big recruit. We'll definitely finish probably in the top 5. But yeah, this class is just stupid. You've got the 3 guards that are obviously getting a lot of attention, and then John Butler, you know, this 7-1 guy who can hit threes, you know, is hardly getting any attention at all. Yeah, it's a special class, and you know what I like about it is that, you know, we're getting guys that can come in and be effective on both sides of the ball. When you're playing in high school, the ball screen concepts are just so simple compared to what you have to do in college. And all 3 of those guards, Jalen Worley, Matthew Cleveland, and Bryce McGowan's, are all really good ball screen players. And you have to be to play at Florida State. If you want to get minutes, you not only have to play defense, but you have to be really effective, you know, running screens, and those guys are all it, you know. So they're going to come in. We've talked in the past about how hard it is to sustain a program without landing, you know, top 100 guys consistently. And here comes a class with 4 of them, you know, and they're going to be entering onto a team that has, you know, potentially, you know, Polite as a senior, Raekwon Gray as a senior, Sadar Calhoun as a senior, you know, so it's hard not to look ahead to 2021, just salivating over, you know, the potential for that team and the potential for those guys to, you know, and watch them develop and win a bunch of games.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been looking ahead on the calendar for 2021 since about April, but that is just for other reasons. But yeah, it is. I think when I started to really sort of grasp the level of this recruiting class was when James. So James Graham, a guy who's not committed to Florida State, he went to Maryland. Is that right? He committed recently, yeah. I think, to Maryland.
Yeah, Maryland.
We're talking about a top 75, sort of, if you will, a four-star version, like a top 60 or 70 version of Raekwon Gray as a recruit. You know, big guy, can dribble, can shoot. Really someone that would, in most years, I would be excited about as maybe our second best kid in the class, right? Like, because we typically have we seem to have gotten in this rhythm where we're landing one kind of top 25 type of player and then, you know, filling out the rest of the class. And so James Graham would have been a guy that I was pretty pumped about. And he waited too long, quite honestly. And it's probably would have been at Florida State if Florida State had the room to bring him on. You could say the same thing about James White, who's a big-time shooter in Atlanta, and you could say the same thing about Josh Minot. All three of those guys are very good recruits, and all three of them probably did not – no longer had a spot open for them in Florida State's class, and that speaks to how much talent is being brought in, and it's a class that I don't think that maybe I'm saying this hopefully, maybe I'm trying to speak it into existence. I don't think that all three of sort of the big three recruits, if you talk about John Butler's not getting, he might have to redshirt, not getting quite as much attention. And then Naheem McLeod is a JUCO that will definitely provide some defensive presence, but coming in JUCO, all three of the big three high school recruits could have one and done potential. I hope that, I don't think that all three will, but I think you could pick any one of the three and say that could be a one and done player.
Yeah, absolutely. They're right there. You know, just in terms of rankings, they're right there where Patrick Williams was, who was one and done. And in terms of skill, you know, you see guys with this kind of skill level and talent set every year going one and done. I would think that Matthew Cleveland's the most likely of the three to be one and done. But yeah, you never know what's going to happen once the guys get here. We did not peg Malik Beasley as a one and done guy, and he's right. Obviously been successful.
We didn't peg Devin as a two and done. I had him maybe as a three and done, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so these guys are that level of talent, which is, it's great to be talking about three potential one and dones in the same class when, you know, it usually takes about 5 years of recruiting to talk about three different one and dones.
Right, and the positional flexibility that the team is going to have. I mean, you mentioned, let's say that Polite and Calhoun are still on the team and Osborne. I mean, so Polite 6'5". Calhoun 6'5", 6'6"-ish, Osborne 6'8", Matthew Cleveland 6'6", Bryce McGowan 6'6", Jalen Worley 6'4", Raekwon Gray 6'8". So just the positional flexibility to truly, not all those guys can start, and that's the beauty of FSU's system, is that you can be Pat Williams, not start, and still be a top 10 pick, or you can be Fiondu and never start a game and still be a first round pick. So not all those guys will start, but you almost don't lose anything when anyone else is on the court. You still have length, you still have shooting, you still have playmaking skills, you still have multi-positional defense. It's really remarkable the kind of flexibility that's going to be on the court. If you had to, this is in no way, we're gushing about all of these players, so I don't want to make it sound like anybody's being talked less or more than the other, but is there one of the three that, or we'll throw in John Butler there too, is there one of the four that their just skill set really kind of captivates you in like a, wow, I hope this person continues to work hard. I hope they are able to continue the same rate of progress and that could really be a superstar. Is there one standing out to you?
It's got to be Butler. I mean, I would imagine during his recruitment that they showed him a lot of film from John Isaac. I know that Steve Smith was his lead recruiter and Smith wasn't here when Isaac was around, but I'm guessing that's the kind of thing that they're selling him on. You've got this 7'1" guy who can knock down threes. He can dribble the ball. It's like, I'm sure when he's in his driveway shooting, putting up threes, he's Giannis, you know. But
yeah,
the Butler skill set is it's hard not to be intrigued by a 7-1 guy with guard skills.
He has not proven anything at a high enough level to be given the name unicorn, but he does kind of evoke those Porzingis type of I just when you see the shooting and the dribbling, free, you know, Giannis or Porzingis, to go in a different direction, just to be able to give a little voice to someone else. The progress I've seen from Bryce McGowan's between maybe 12 months ago to now is really remarkable. And, you know, we know his brother Trey, we've seen him play multiple times, play well against Florida State multiple times. He's now out at Nebraska, transferred from Pitt, but, Bryce does not maybe quite have the physical frame to be, I don't know if he can be one and done because he doesn't have that Pat Williams sort of 225 pound physique. Maybe his physique is more on the spectrum towards Vassell than Pat, although maybe not quite as skinny as Vassell, but his ceiling to me is pretty high. You need to see him get a little more consistent with the three, but the range he shows on the three is deep NBA range. The ferocity with which he goes up to attack the basket is real. He is throwing down on kids, and his vision, quite honestly, I mean, he can step in and be that lead guard and have 7 assists a game easy. And so I think Bryce McGowan's to me is someone that is really, I think, on the doorstep of, I don't even, what is he, a 4-star prospect, maybe mid-30s? If I were ranking people, it would be hard for me to find 20 guys higher, you know, with more potential than him.
Yeah, if you can shoot, you can shoot. It doesn't matter the level it translates. So you've got the potential, if he can tighten up his mechanics a little bit, you've got the potential of a freshman coming in, you know, from day one and just being that guy that's knocking down shots. And that is a skill that you cannot overvalue.
And the mechanics do need to be tightened up. Let's just put that out there. Just like Devin Vassell's mechanics needed to be tightened up a little bit, very similar to MJ Walker's. I mean, that's not an uncommon thing for high schoolers. So, you know, his dribble can get a little loose. He kind of sometimes palms it or gets a little high with it, which is not unheard of for someone who's 6'6" that has velociraptor arms and is still growing into their body. I mean, mind you, we're talking about a high school senior here. So game has to be worked on, but the game is there to be a big time basketball player. And the same can be said for Matthew Cleveland, and the same can be said for Jalen Worley. So I don't want to, maybe the next pod we can flip and talk about those two.
Yeah, I'm totally fascinated by Worley, so I'd like to opportunity to talk about him at a later date.
Yep. Well, I'll give you that opportunity, sir. For now, I feel like I don't have the stopwatch on, but we probably pushing an hour, and folks deserve it. It's been a long time without college basketball talk, so I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back. You know, hopefully we can start getting more consistent again with the season coming up. Have a good rest of your weekend, Michael.
You as well, and watch some of these NBA games.
Yeah,
I'm the guy now.
Second round, the East second round should be pretty good since all the top teams moved on.
Absolutely, yep.
All right.